Between the Lies podcast. Read between the lies.
Yeah. Shawty who love me, obsessed with the money. She fell in love with the Louis and Prada. I'ma see death before I see the sauna. My homie gon' ride to the death like Al-Qaeda. I hide in my senses and alter perception. This shit right here make you call off your henchmen. I heard your new shit, it's all about the bitches. Stuck in my head like I'm serving life sentence. I need a reverend, I need a beverage. I use my rhymes on my mind as a weapon. And that shit is lethal, it murk all you people. There's even evil inside the cathedrals. Lost in my mind again, no sense of time again. I'm in so deep I can't find a way out.
And welcome back to the Between the Lies podcast, where we deep dive into whatever wicked or warped subject we might find our way into at that given time. As always, I am your host, and I'm proud to be bringing you the Between the Lies podcast. After an extra long hiatus, I'm about 20 days or even more past my last episode, regretfully. I have been dealing with some teeth issues with my wisdom tooth, and I spoke about it a little bit in the last episode. I'm literally waiting weeks for a surgeon. Granted, the surgeon that they say is going to do my teeth is one of the most renowned surgeons in the country, but I feel like they all say that. So nonetheless, I've been dealing with constant pain in my wisdom tooth and just having to deal with it until I get this surgery. So today, I'm on a mix of ibuprofen and Tylenol, enough so where I feel comfortable to talk. I've been having to go to work and barely being able to talk. It's been literally impossible. But nonetheless, moving forward, I want to talk about today's subject. And this is a subject that I am quite literally obsessed with, for better or for worse. Now, for years, I have been looking into human and child trafficking. My interest in the subject started around the time that the Epstein Island news broke, and I actually was reached out to by somebody on TikTok regarding a connection between Epstein Island and an island in Michigan in the 1970s, which also followed the same exact blueprint. You got it, children being flown out for nefarious purposes, and not only that, but celebrities, high-ranking political officials, etc., attending these places, and possibly either doing it on their own accord or being blackmailed into it. But I have been obsessed with this because it is the most evil thing you could ever imagine, and I'd like to do my part in trying to expose this. Now, today we're going to be talking specifically about Arizona and some links to child and human trafficking that's been going on there, and a company, I guess you could call it, called Midnight Productions, which is just the general term that people refer to when they're talking about human and child trafficking in Arizona, which many people consider a hub, a trafficking center, if you would. So we're going to be zoning in on that and focusing on that. But first, I do want to just open everybody's eyes here and let you know that there's absolutely as well a link with child trafficking and child protective services. And I'm going to expose that with a little data, and then we're going to read a couple stories. And I want you to keep in mind that these stories we're reading are factual, are news stories, let alone these are just a few of the hundreds of stories you can find by Googling child trafficking foster homes. If you were to Google that, or specifically maybe a better search engine like DuckDuckGo, I will tell you right now that you will probably find hundreds of stories. I found countless ones. I'm only reading three or four of ones that I found and wrote down for the idea of time and not being talking your ear off for 2 hours. But let's read that and let's talk about some data that is especially eye-opening regarding child protective services and its link to human trafficking. Half of all human trafficking victims are minors, according to SlaveryNoMore.org. It states that 70% of these minors are children in the foster care system. Foster Focus magazine, an online publication devoted to the U.S. foster care system, places that number even higher at 80%. In a report by the state government of Connecticut as well, 86% of victims rescued from domestic minor sex trafficking in 2011 have been involved with child welfare services in some manner and may have been victimized while in foster care or residential placement. Now, these statistics are especially disturbing considering there's an estimated 300,000 children that are involved in sex trafficking in the U.S. yearly, which means 210,000 to 258,000 children have been failed by the very system that was sworn to protect them and is in place to help them. That's why you will hear a lot of people talk about Child Protective Services and say those kids, whether it be kids that are with a drug addict mother or don't really have a responsible parent, etc., gambling debts, whatever you could imagine, they'll say, well, those kids are actually better off with their terrible parent than they would be going into the foster care system. And I believe it's as simple as this. The foster care system, child protective services, etc., is the biggest, you would call, pool of children that these sick people can draw from. So what happens is, maybe Child Protective Services, when it first came out, was meant for good, you know, to save children and to be this government-funded institution to really help kids who didn't have a chance growing up at home with an addict mother or whatever the case may be. But as time goes on, these sick people who are out to exploit minors, and again, the sickest crime you could ever imagine is exploiting a minor specifically for sexual purposes. Those people deserve to burn in hell, and that's just how I feel about it. But these sickos who do this kind of stuff, first of all, there's huge business in it. Unfortunately, there's millions of people in the world that, excuse my French, get off from some of this sick shit. So there is a market for it, unfortunately, and all those people deserve to burn in hell as well. But also, it kind of opens the door for these people who either are just sickos or are in it for financial or business gain to infiltrate these organizations, whether it be posing for being a foster home for these disadvantaged children or whatever the case may be. These people are infiltrating the system. I'm going to read a couple stories as well that connect directly foster care or child protective services to human trafficking. And I want you to just keep in mind that these are just two or three of the stories you can find online. I'm sure there are hundreds more, and I'm sure there are thousands, maybe even millions more stories from the time that Child Protective Services has been created until 2024 as we're speaking today. So let's read the first story and hopefully this opens some eyes. So this is from USA Today, and I will be paraphrasing it for legal reasons because I don't think I can read it word for word. But nonetheless, foster care children, it states, are easy prey for predators. They disappear without a real search. It also states, predators think no one will look for these missing kids in foster care. Today, unfortunately, they are right, and that's something that we talked about just a little bit ago. It states, an estimated 55 children will disappear from America's foster care system today. Okay? Today, based on statistics, 55 children will disappear from the foster care system. For too many, there will be no searching, no looking through the streets in search of them. No pictures would be posted, no social media campaign. Anaya Walker was 16 when she went missing in late 2019. She was living in a group home, and her family says she was the victim of sexual trafficking. 5 months later, her body, disfigured, shoeless, etc., was found discarded on the middle of a freeway. It took the police 12 days to even identify her. In the past 20 years, agencies have closed the cases of more than 100,000 missing American foster children before they were found. Tens of thousands are listed simply as runaways. Others simply remain missing, and the state just has no idea where they are. It also states, disappearing without real searches. Having been a foster mom to 10 children in Arizona, they state, I know from personal experience that these kids are vulnerable. One infant I fostered was born to an 11-year-old child. Naively, I asked the social worker if the grandmother would help the new mother raise the baby. She didn't think so, she said. The social worker told me, Grandma is the reason the child got pregnant because Grandma was pimping this child out. The social worker was not fazed by this statement. It obviously wasn't their first rodeo. It states, the need for reform is certainly urgent. Tens of thousands of American boys and girls in foster care are disappearing with little to no real effort to search for them. In some states, cases can be closed within only 6 months. And that means they don't get a lead within 6 months and then the case is just completely dropped. In other cases, as we reported on in Arizona, which is something we'll be going over later in the podcast, a child may not even have a photograph of themselves that can be shared with police. I guess that's some type of privacy law it's saying here. It also states it should come as no surprise that foster kids constitute most of America's sexually trafficked children. Predators know that children without stable families are easy prey, something else we didn't talk about, but these children are especially vulnerable. They don't come from good homes. They don't know what real love when it comes to like parent and child relationship is. So they're susceptible. They're easy to trick. They've never experienced anyone who really cared about them. So all it takes is somebody to feign interest and love for them and say, hey, I want to take you under my wing. I want to treat you nice. I want to care about you. You've never had a parent. Let me be the parent you never had. And simply they're whisked away and into this system, whether they're being pimped out on the streets or it's a bigger operation altogether. It states without involved families to lead the search, without motivated authorities to search, and hindered by laws that prevent transparency about the details of a child's identity, tens of thousands of missing foster children remain just that, trafficked and missing. We do not have nationwide protocols for the prevention of disappearances, go figure, or for the search and recovery of missing foster children. So I ask you, based on those statistics, 55 children in the foster care system that go missing each day, let's say 40 of them, or let's say half of them, are just runaways, which is entirely possible. At some point, they're going to be found. At some point, they would turn up somewhere. But let's say half of them are just runaways who are never found. That would mean anywhere from 25 to 30 of them are being trafficked throughout the system, just based on my logical thinking here. So that would mean that this is one of the biggest problems that our country faces today. And again, when you turn on media, all you're hearing about is Kamala Harris and Donald Trump and this and that and the economy and this and that. But we never really talk about one of the most sinister and sick issues you can ever imagine. And again, it's that there's no nationwide protocol for this. How is it that no sitting president, no sitting politician that I know of at least has taken this to a global scale and said, hold on, there are 50 plus foster children that are missing every single day. There has to be a way to track this information. There has to be a way to find these children. Instead, based on this research, this story we just read, it just seems like these kids are generally forgotten. So that right there tells you the link between foster care, child protective services, and child trafficking. Is it possible that this organization, which stood and was created to protect children, is actually betraying them in the worst way possible? Next, we're going to be reading from a PowerPoint presentation I found online. It's a paper by Michelle Lilly, and it's about the connection between foster care and human trafficking, and it stated an unholy alliance, which is exactly what's going on here. But nonetheless, it states foster care and human trafficking. 50% of children sold into trafficking in California are foster care children. At least 85% of all CSEC in New York had a child welfare background, and I'm imagining that's a child who was trafficked, and 75% of those residing in New York had spent time in foster care. 98% of children who are identified as survivors of sex trafficking had previous involvement with child welfare services, and many were legally in the care and custody of the state while they were being prosecuted, by traffickers. The next page states what we know for sure. As many as 300 to 400,000 children are commercially sexually exploited in the United States each year. And again, I always say if that's the number that's on record, you know there's thousands more. So maybe double or triple that number. But that's just my opinion. It also states at least 800,000 runaway children will be lured into commercial sexual exploitation each year. And this looks like a quote from somebody who was in foster care. It states, being in foster care was the perfect training for commercial sexual exploitation. I was used to being moved without warning, without any say, not knowing where I was going or whether I was allowed to pack my clothes. After years in foster care, I didn't think anyone would want to take care of me unless they were paid. So when my pimp expected me to make money to support the family, it made sense to me. So again, the idea that these kids were never loved on any real level and never had any control over their lives. So then when somebody approaches them and tries to get them into sex trafficking, it also kind of feels like more of the same for them. And sucks to say this, but it feels like home for them. Like they're used to being controlled and their every move being picked out. Most of these kids don't even pick what they're going to eat ever. You know, they're just told what they're going to eat when they're with the state. So there's a lot that goes into it, but these are the most vulnerable children, and I just don't think enough is being done to protect them on a nationwide and a global level. Lastly, I want to pull some statistics from that same PowerPoint presentation paper, and it's very well written. So if Michelle, who wrote this, ever hears this podcast, hats off to you, even though I'm not wearing a hat. And that's my dad joke for the day. It states homeless / aging out youth, which is something we will be going over when it comes to this Arizona trafficking that is so prevalent and is kind of being scrubbed from the internet. It states 22% of youth aging out, which is when you get old enough to where the foster care system will not take care of you anymore. I guess 18. It is 18. I'm sorry. 22% of youth aging out of the foster care system end up homeless. 21 through 42% of homeless youth were sexually abused prior to running away from home. 75% of all sex trafficking victims were at one point homeless. 1 in 3 homeless teens are lured into child sex trafficking by a trafficker within 48 hours of leaving their home. So this is a vicious cycle, and it's happening every day, and it's something we don't think about often because most of us don't work in that field. We're not into foster care or helping these children or anything close to it. So it's something we really don't think about. So that's the purpose for me presenting these numbers. I know it's a lot of numbers and I'm throwing them all at you at once. And, you know, it's two different articles. So some are drawn from a different state and then this one's drawn from California. So some of the numbers are different as well. But the point being here that I'm pointing out is that this is being allowed to happen, at least in some type of way. And what I mean by that is, again, we don't see enough of an effort or emphasis on this huge problem. And many people will bring up child trafficking and not really link it to these, again, institutions that are sworn to protect us and our children. It should be a safe place for these children who have nothing at home or the parent who doesn't care about them. But instead, based on these numbers alone, various stories you can find on the internet, it is anything but a safe place. But I digress. I do want to talk about Arizona, specifically the company, you can call it, that people call Midnight Productions. I also want to point out the fact that I won't be saying that term for the rest of the podcast episode because over the last couple weeks, reading a multitude of stories, whether it be from eyewitness accounts, from people who are homeless in the street mentioning this company known as MP or more like a high-profile organization possibly running out of Arizona, many people have scared me with their comments and stories and stated stories of being in danger for speaking out against this specific group. So I will no longer be referring to that name. I did mention it, of course, about 20 seconds ago, but I want you to do me a favor, and with this podcast playing, or if you want to pause the podcast and come back to it, Google that specific phrase that people are describing as this trafficking organization in Arizona, and I will tell you right now, you're not going to find too much on the internet. The most you'll really find is Reddit threads of people telling their personal stories. And this YouTube documentary that was actually done by a paranormal investigator who stumbled upon this information. It's an amazing documentary and it got me so deep into these theories and this rabbit hole. It was very well done. So hats off to the maker of that documentary as well. But you're not going to find too much on the internet about this besides people recounting personal stories and comments under threads, etc. So it's really hard to find. And you start to wonder, with the idea of censorship going on in America, is that by accident or is that deliberate? Is it possible that people are getting closer to the truth in Arizona and that's why it is being removed from Google, etc.? And again, there's a few hundred videos about it on YouTube from, you know, random content creators, but you really have to dig to find them. If you were to YouTube search that specific term, which I won't be mentioning again, you would not find too many things besides this documentary, which just came out a few weeks ago. But if you were to go on a Reddit thread and click on some links that people are providing, you're going to see that there's a lot of videos about this. It just seems to be being suppressed by YouTube. So I found that to be quite disturbing in itself. That kind of tells a story, at least in my mind. I also just want to state, for legal purposes as well as safety purposes, that these are all allegations. I'm not claiming this to be factual. I'm simply reading people's stories and accounts of life experiences that people have gone through, and they believe that this organization exists and is running a good amount of Arizona when it comes to child and human trafficking. So I'm not saying any of this is fact. In fact, I'm on the fence whether this is one organization operating all together, which, of course, anything, as we always talk about on the Between the Lies podcast, could be in terms of the possibilities, or is it just small organizations, you know, gangs, etc., that are running human trafficking and people on the streets, specifically the homeless who have been affected by this more than anybody, are grouping this up into one large idea. And you have to think, a lot of these homeless people, specifically in Arizona, one of the biggest drug problems there is methamphetamine, which of course makes people extra paranoid. So sifting through these stories, I've read a few where it seems to me, based on my experience in life, that these people may be recounting experiences they believe to be true, but the methamphetamine or uppers that they're taking, whether it be Adderall or meth or whatever, are definitely influencing them to feel like they're being followed or gang stalked, etc. So of course, take this all with a grain of salt, but I want you guys to research this and go down this rabbit hole as well after you listen to the podcast tonight, because if you're into any stuff like this and just finding out the dark layers of the world that we don't know too much about, if you're anything like me, you will be captivated by this, and it's really hard to put it down once you see some of this information. So I'm going to read a few stories, a few Reddit threads, etc., and we're going to start with an article I found from somebody who wished to remain anonymous, which I saw a lot of in researching this organization specifically. So let's read that. I'm going to read it word for word. I may paraphrase a little bit for the sake of time, but nonetheless, it is definitely an interesting story and had me on the edge of my seat. But quickly, before I read the story, I just want to give you the general consensus online of what people believe is possibly, allegedly happening in Arizona. The consensus throughout the comments and the hundreds of stories I've been reading these past couple weeks, trapped down this wormhole, rabbit hole, whatever you want to call it, is that that specific organization, which I won't mention again, I mentioned it earlier in the episode, is abducting homeless people specifically and using them for nefarious purposes, which includes sexual assault and even something that people call snuff films. And for those of us who don't know, a snuff film is the idea of hurting somebody beyond belief on camera, filming it, possibly even killing these people, which is sick for me to even repeat to you guys on this podcast. But I try to just lay down exactly what's going on, or at least the idea of the theory of what's going on. But these snuff films, of course, there is a demand for it, as sick as that is to say. So whether we know it or not, there's normal everyday people, and I'm sure high-ranking politicians, etc., that are into some of the sickest stuff you could ever imagine. So the idea is that this organization is stealing people off the streets, whisking them away, hurting them in one way or another and possibly filming exactly what's happening. And then there seems to be some underground network where they're distributing this material. And when we talk about places like Epstein Island or North Fox Island, and we know for a fact those places existed, it's really not too far-fetched to think that some type of organization could be running the same exact way, except a little bit darker in America, specifically in Arizona. But without further ado, let's read the story before I get too far off track. This story sent chills down my spine. It states, "The following was written by someone who wishes to remain anonymous," which is creepy in itself. It states, "I, the person who wrote this, used to work in civil service for a small government research department in Phoenix, Arizona. Most of the research we did was mundane and really dull," they state. "One thing we did was studies of other departments, including the sheriff's office, headed by the famous Joe," we're going to say, because I want to exclude any names for safety and legal purposes. He was known as the toughest sheriff in America at the time. It doesn't really state a date, although, it does say 2006. So on more than one occasion when interviewing the sheriff's department employees, allegations of misconduct would come up, usually regarding drug and underage prostitution rings, which we know is widespread in America. In 2006, it states, like I said, while conducting an exit or after employment interview with the former sheriff's department, a cop or somebody who was involved with the organization, a similar allegation came up but with an added twist. The interview was basically normal, covering aspects of the job, benefits, compensations, etc. At the end, I asked interviewees if they had anything they would like to add. In this instance, the respondent seemed like he had something he wanted to add but was extremely reluctant. I assured him I would respect his confidentiality, and he was actually under oath, or I was under oath, the person who wrote this, to do so, and if I did violate that confidentiality, he could file charges on me. He began to tell me there were bad things, criminal things, going on at the sheriff's department, but was reluctant to go any further. I let him know I had heard things like that in the past, and even prompted him by saying, "You're talking about the drug rings and the prostitution rings, aren't you?" He then said, "Yes, but that's not all of it. They're making movies in old warehouses," which is crazy. After my somewhat blasé but friendly response, he went on to say these movies were using little kids. And when he said that, he did not mean teenagers. He also mentioned a specific, highly placed person in the sheriff's department. Again, I'm not going to name any names. A few months later, I was visiting with an old friend and one of his buddies. During the course of the conversation, I mentioned an incident where the sheriff's department had given me a copy of the blueprints to the new jail to use as a map because they were tired of providing me with an armed escort when I had to go down there. I thought this was really stupid of them and joked about selling it on eBay. My friend's buddy then began asking me what I knew about the sheriff's department and things I heard. When I asked for specifics, he replied, "Criminal activities." I told him about the drug and teenage prostitution rings, which were basic common knowledge on the street. He asked me if I heard anything in Scottsdale, and I said that I did, something about movies being shot in some old warehouses out there. He then said, "Did I know what kind of movies?" And I said, "What I heard was CP, which, you know, underage, very young children, but you hear all kind of things," he states. And he said really loudly, "It's not just that, it's snuff films." This was a bit much for me, and I looked over to my friend as to say, "Is he for real?" And all my friend said was, "It's true." Then as he was going on about it, he said, "Do you know who's behind it?" And before I could say anything, he blurted out the same name that the ex-employee had. The last reference to these snuff movies came while visiting a friend of one of my neighbors. We had gone over there to party when one of the neighbor's friends found out where I worked. He was at first suspicious since contraband herbal party supplies were in evidence, then after a while became more comfortable. So I guess the guy at the party, to get away from the story quickly, was smoking weed, and then he found out this guy was involved in the sheriff's department. So he was a little sketchy around the guy, but I guess after a couple drinks or whatever they're taking or drinking, he got a little more comfortable. He then asked me what I knew about the sheriff's department and also the witness protection program, and could I get a hold of someone for him. Upon me asking why, he wanted to know stuff. He then went into a long tale about how his cousin was a LEO, probably some type of officer or lead officer, I'm imagining, and was involved in a case that involved law enforcement and federal judges. He then provided some very gruesome details about special movies being made that involve very small children and infants, grown-ups, strange costumes, and snuff films being produced. His cousin supposedly had entered witness protection. No one had ever went to trial, and he hadn't heard from her since. He wanted to know if I could send a message to his cousin. The movies he mentioned at one point were filmed in some old warehouses and also mentioned the same name of the Sheriff's Department employee. The details he gave me, supposedly coming from his cousin to whom he was very close, were absolutely horrific. He had also mentioned that his cousin had been badly affected by this and had been persuaded to stay on the case because of their in at the department. Supposedly, also, this was something she stumbled upon while doing undercover work investigating cocaine smuggling. Unfortunately, I was not in a position to help him. Same story from three different sources that I seriously doubt knew each other in any capacity. One of the deputies whose name came up in connection with these things described above was named, I'm not even going to say the name, who then retired with full pension and was rehired the next day with a new position at over $150,000 a year in addition to his guaranteed pension. His son, by the same name, is a Sheriff's Department employee. He was found to have been hiring friends to work for the Sheriff's Department without having them do too much actual work. He was fired in 2011 based on the findings of a six-month probe conducted by a county sheriff into allegations including mismanagement, nepotism, and obstruction of a criminal case. That investigation was triggered by a 63-page internal memo detailing a long list of questionable behavior among top sheriff's office employees. Despite his public fall from grace during the scandal, he now works as a private investigator, offering products and services which include, among other things, child abduction recovery. This person lost his job and was vilified in the press for engaging in various forms of corruption, but he was never fully questioned regarding his knowledge of the abuse of adults and children and their use in snuff films. These are the crimes that go uninvestigated and unpunished because exposing them would expose the rotten core of the justice system itself. So, wow, I mean, I am literally shocked reading that story. And like I mentioned earlier, the general consensus online throughout people's own descriptions, life experiences they've had, is that this organization is abducting people off the street and they are using them to produce snuff films and handing out the snuff films through some underground network, which unfortunately we know there are many underground criminal networks, but specifically for trafficking, which is one of the highest grossing underground networks in terms of criminal activity. And this specific person, of course, had relation or was involved with the sheriff's office and had three different people tell him on multiple occasions, name specific names, and mention that those people were involved in either participating in some of these six snuff films or, you know, hiding the information or possibly being paid off. So he had three different people, three different walks of life who all had some type of connection to it, and they all had that same common knowledge. And of course, he heard this as well at first from somebody who was involved directly with the sheriff's department and was reluctant to tell him. It is also very telling that this person chose to remain anonymous because they have nothing to gain from it. In fact, them remaining anonymous tells you everything they need to know, or you need to know rather, and that they didn't feel safe to put these names out there and put their name next to it. So that's very telling. And that's the reason I'm omitting the names tonight, because truly, I want to spread this information. I want you guys to go down this rabbit hole with me, but I don't want to get too deep into it where I'm saying actual names. And again, these are all allegations, so by all means, some of this could be greatly exaggerated. The next story also caught me off guard and includes a few different names, which again, I won't be including today. But as I read this story, just keep in mind that there, again, are hundreds of stories, specifically from homeless people and a channel called Tales from the Streets, which is on YouTube, as well as a paranormal channel who did this 3 or 4 hour documentary, which is amazing, on what we'll call MP tonight. So I can't keep saying the name of the organization for legal, etc. purposes. But this story caught me off guard, and I wanted to share it with you guys and then encourage you to do some of the research on your own on Reddit, etc., and go down the same rabbit hole as I have. It states, I was born and raised in Arizona, a small town between Phoenix and Tucson. I learned of MP as an adult. I had moved to Mesa at that time. I met a young girl that years before was held hostage, sexually assaulted for months by a man known as Tom, we'll say. That's not the actual name, but throughout the years in Mesa, I met many girls or women that had been connected some way with this group. Tom, again, not the real name, his name came up quite often in these discussions. I don't know why, but some of them would open up. Again, these are homeless women who've been on the streets and are especially vulnerable. There is the possibility that some of these are like a drug-induced psychosis. I'm not completely denying that some of this could be attributed to that. These women trusted me. I was told that this person, we'll call him Tom for the sake of safety, etc., was responsible for the kidnapping of a little girl in Mesa years earlier, which is a case I'll be covering on the next episode of the Between the Lies podcast, as well as the Johnny Gotch disappearance, which is a big one when we're talking about somebody possibly abducted in the, you know, terms of human trafficking, possibly, at least what most people believed. So they're stating that this guy, Tom, who was part of some biker gang, was responsible for the kidnapping of that little girl, Mikkel Biggs. At that time in my life, I was addicted to meth. I was around bikers and a well-known organization, which again, I won't name. It's insane because this group all knew what happened to Mikkel Biggs. I assume they knew because they had found her body or something. Then one evening, sitting at the home of one of the members of this biker gang, the 5 o'clock news came on and there was a story about Mikkel Biggs. Her parents were talking about how she was still missing. In that home, there were many of this biker group's members. I can't explain the change in the living room when that story came on. They were uncomfortable. I guess that would be the only word to describe it. I just wanted to run out of there. All the info I knew was I wasn't sure who knew what I was told, which doesn't make any grammatical sense. Anyways, I could go on and on with details. If I did, though, some could figure out who I am, but I'm going to put names out there, ones that open their mouths with little comments about Mikkel Biggs. Some names were said when I was being told what happened to her. Some of these people just have info and were not at all involved. He then goes on to state the names of these specific members of the group, which I will not be including. But it said that one of the members had a copy of the snuff film that Mikkel Biggs was killed in, and he's got it hidden. Many of them had deep information, and their best friends were also involved. Now he states, I know a girl in Arizona who's in prison who, as a child, was a hostage of these sickos. Her job was to clean up the small children after they were abused. Again, he's naming names. I can't do that. He states, Melissa so-and-so has info also. It's also been said that her body was buried on a property near a cemetery in Pinal County between Coolidge and Florence. This ring of sickos goes so deep, it involves law enforcement, judges, lawyers. If I were to tell you everything I know, it would blow your mind, and the proof. I never wanted to know as much as I do. This has been eating me up for years. What blows my mind is these men, these sickos I have been around, some, most of my life. Some, just years, are all involved and know more than I do. It's all around us here in Arizona. Again, he names somebody else. We'll call him Joe, is in Tucson. He states, Ray, Robin. There are so many more names. I think with the ones I point out, I will bring more info for whoever wants to dig. And I just want to address the fact that that is a horribly written comment in every sense of the word grammar. But nonetheless, we have another story that's tying this organization in Arizona to these snuff films, and specifically tying that specific organization to the disappearance of Mikkel Biggs, which is look into that story. Again, I'll be covering it in the next couple weeks on the podcast, along with the Johnny Gotch disappearance, two of the craziest disappearances you've ever heard of. And of course, here in this story, that's being linked to child trafficking, as many people say the Johnny Gotch disappearance is being linked to human trafficking. So I'm aware that these are just stories on the internet. I'm not claiming them to be factual at all. But what I am urging you to do is go and do the research and watch this specific documentary that I watched that blew my mind in many meanings of that phrase. So the title of the YouTube channel, which you could find it on, again, I'm not going to be mentioning the organization anymore, is The Paranormal Files. It's a paranormal investigator. That's what he does on YouTube. Has thousands of views, thousands of subscribers. Hats off to him for a heck of a documentary. But he came upon some of this information and felt it couldn't be not spoken of. So he decided to make this documentary, which is, again, out of character for him. He's not somebody who investigates trafficking in Arizona or anywhere. And he did a hell of a job with this documentary and opened my eyes in so many ways. Also, I encourage you, again, to follow these Reddit rabbit holes and look up this specific organization tonight, as soon as this podcast is over, even while it's playing, and read through these stories. I'm guessing that maybe half of them could be complete bullshit or could be a mix of a drug-induced psychosis and the possibility that a smaller group, or, you know, a group of people who aren't this large organization operating in Arizona, are involved in human trafficking. And as word gets around, it becomes this story that's exaggerated from one person to the next, and it's like whisper down the lane. By the time you get the story, it's inflated beyond belief. But I'm also thinking, based on some of these stories, what are the chances that all these stories coincide and many people have some of the same beliefs, as well as many people mentioning the same locations within Arizona, like we pointed out earlier in the first story, these little broken down warehouses that this organization is apparently running and using for snuff films. But we do know that, based on what we talked about earlier with the CPS connection to child and human trafficking, that this is a widespread problem. It's not just happening in Arizona at all. There are so many children going missing. It is bonkers. There's not even a nationwide way to research or look into this information, or at least on record, they're telling us there's no nationwide database. So why aren't they keeping these numbers? As well as something I've talked about on a different episode of the podcast was the migrant children coming over and why I believe the border to be wide open. At this time, there are more than 500,000 children that have come over the border without a guardian, family member, or parents, or anyone to look after them. And those children have been placed in families. And I'm putting that in quotes because most of these children have been placed with families that aren't really their families, and it could never be confirmed that these people are actually family members. So we have this influx of people coming over the border, but let's put the people aside. You know, they're just looking for a good opportunity, and I can't fault them because our border is wide open. But you have children who are being sent alone by their parents in hopes of a better opportunity for their child. First off, shame on those parents. I don't know what the hell goes through people's minds. I would never, if I had a child in the future, send that child across the border without, you know, the mother or somebody at least. But nonetheless, on paper, on record, they're saying there's 300,000 to 400,000 children that have basically been wiped off the face of the earth. That means they've been placed with a family, and later on, the government basically can't get in touch with these families. They can't check on the safety of the child, etc. And what a lot of it sounds like to me is the perfect recipe for human and child trafficking. And it's the same thing with Child Protective Services. You have these two vessels in which thousands, maybe millions of children are in these systems and being provided, and there doesn't seem to be great oversight in these type of things that are going on today in America. And it seems to me, that it would be simple over time for people involved in human and child trafficking, some of these sick stuff like snuff films that we've talked about throughout the episode, to infiltrate these government organizations or pay them off to a certain extent. Where is it possible these things are being overlooked purposely? Anyways, I digress. I want you guys to listen to this episode. Hopefully, I opened a lot of your minds and opened a lot of your eyes to some of the stuff that's going on in our entire country, but specifically in Arizona as well, like we talked about. Go ahead, as I always encourage you guys, do the research on your own. If anybody wants to reach out to me with theories they have, whether it be about what we talked about on this episode or something completely out of left field and different, something you want me to look into, your thoughts on the podcast today or another podcast I've recorded, you can reach out to me directly on the Between the Lies podcast at Gmail email that I've made. And that is literally for you guys to reach out to me. I want to be able to interact with people. I want to get people's thoughts and opinions on some of the stuff we've touched on throughout the duration of this podcast, which has now been going on for over a year, and I'm so proud of. As always, again, I am here doing this podcast tonight specifically on this topic, but any topic, to open some people's eyes. And hopefully, along the way, if I could open one person's eyes, maybe hundreds or thousands would be better, but if I could open one person's eyes to some of the crazy shit that is going on in our world, my job will be done. Because one day, I woke up to it, and I've never been the same since. So there's pros and cons to it, but I'd rather be aware of it than kind of live looking through rose-colored glasses. As always, I am your host. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening to the Between the Lies podcast. Over and out, signing off. Until next time.